This is the Pet Podcast on Pets.ca, episode number 36, six diseases that you can get from your pet for January 2008. Happy New Year, pet lovers, and welcome to the 36th. Pet Podcast on Pets.ca. My name is Marco, and as always, we're coming to you from Montreal, Quebec, Canada. Happy New Year, everyone. Hope your holidays were good, and hope you had a good New Year's. This is our first podcast of the year, and we intend to do bunches more interviews with Dr. Lee or interviews with other members and members of the pet community at large. For today's show, we are doing an interview with Dr. Lee, and for today, we're going to talk about six diseases that you can actually get from your pet, so it's a podcast on zoonosis. But before we actually get into the podcast, I would just like to welcome any new listeners, and if you're just a casual listener and you just made your way, and you want to get every podcast that we put out automatically, you can, of course, subscribe in iTunes. Just go to the front page of our blog, that's www.pets.ca/blog, and click the button that says subscribe in iTunes. By doing so, you'll just get every single episode we put out. You can also use a podcatcher of choice for me, which is Google Reader. You can just download Google Reader. And again, just put in our address, www.pets.ca/blog. And by putting in that address, again, every time you open up Google Reader, once we've put out a new post or a new podcast, you will get it automatically. If you want to suggest episodes for the podcast or send me any comments or criticism or anything at all, you can do so at pets.ca@gmail.com. And of course, we love comments. So if you want to comment on any of the posts or podcasts, you can do so directly in the blog at www.pets.ca/blog. Or you can do so in the podcasting forum on the pets.ca bulletin board. Just make your way to the forums. So let's get into our interview with Dr. Lee. It's a podcast on zoonosis, and let's get right into it now. So I'd like very much to welcome back Dr. Lee to our podcast. This is the first one of this year, so Happy New Year to our listeners, of course, and Happy New Year, Dr. Lee. Happy to have you back.
Happy New Year, Marco. It's great to be back.
Thanks very much. So for today, I think we'd like to talk about common diseases that people can get from their pets, and maybe even just touch on diseases that humans can give their pets. And I know the common term for this is called zoonosis, but I was wondering if maybe you could give us just a definition of what zoonosis is.
The simplest definition of zoonosis is a disease that is transmitted from an animal to a human.
Is it also from a human to an animal, or is it strictly from animal to human?
It can be. Some people will call it reverse zoonosis if it goes from human to animal.
Excellent. So I know a lot of people are actually concerned about this. They wonder, you know, they hear stories about, you know, stuff spreading, and some stuff can actually be spread directly, and then other stuff is spread indirectly. So I guess I just wanted to really focus, I mean, we'll talk about lots of stuff, but I wanted to focus on the diseases that humans can get most often from their pets. What would be the ones that you see most frequently?
Well, and certainly the ones that, as far as I see frequently, it's more of the what the dogs have. Unfortunately, with the human side, that's going to have to be with human doctors. With dogs, especially with puppies, we see a lot of roundworms and hookworms, and those are a very common zoonotic disease, definitely here in America. We also see Giardia and tapeworms with the dogs as well.
If we could just go over them really quickly, for those people that don't know what roundworms and hookworms are, can you just give us a really quick summary of what they are?
Roundworms and hookworms are intestinal parasites that are found in dogs and cats, and some of them are transmitted in utero or through the milk, and so it's one of the reasons why virtually all kittens and puppies can have the roundworms. The difficulty is that their eggs are microscopic, and when they get transmitted to people, humans over generations have not had these intestinal parasites like the dogs and the cats. So where in dogs and cats, they will just sit inside of the intestines, inside the humans, these worms get a little bit lost, and they start to do something called visceral migration, where they start moving from the intestines and start moving throughout the body. This happens very commonly with roundworms. It's a more common disease than we think about. There's actually over 100,000 people in the U.S. that get infected each year with roundworms. And with this migration through the body, this happens to over 700 of them. And those can find a common place that it's found is in the eye. So in a dog, a roundworm is not really that big of a deal. It's a little bit gross, may sometimes give them a little bit of an upset tummy. Whereas in people, not only will it have much more dramatic signs with the intestines, but sometimes it can start to migrate throughout the body. There was actually a case where there is a young child over in California who went permanently blind from a roundworm infection that he got from his golden retriever puppy.
And how is it spread? Like, how is a human going to get it?
Roundworms are going to be fecal-oral. And so they're microscopic eggs, and a lot of times that thing, of course, you would never be have that as a possibility. But when you have a dog that is in the next room and licks his bum and then runs into the next room and jumps on your lap and gives you a big kiss, it becomes a little bit more of a possibility than we think about.
And then, like, some people do this all the time, you know, some people, myself included, you know, we just love them so much that even though maybe we even know that these things are possible, we don't necessarily take the precautions. So I guess I'm wondering, do you have any guess how frequently this happens? How often do you see it, let's say?
Well, again, the numbers are that, I mean, it is there. There is, you know, 100,000 in the U.S. That's not a large number.
Okay.
But that is something that is present. With that said, you know, I shared some ravioli with my dog off my fork last night. It's not something that I, you know, worry about as much. However, I think that, one, puppies and kittens or strays are going to be a much different category than the dogs that are in your household that you know.
Right.
For example, if they're in heartworm endemic areas, if they're on HeartGuard actually protects against hookworm and roundworm. A lot of dogs are already pre-protected for some of these zoonotic diseases without us even knowing about it.
That's pretty encouraging, at least. And what about in terms of other diseases? So roundworms and hookworms, those would be the most common. And after that, what can we expect?
Tapeworms are a common thing that are seen. Tapeworms are transmitted typically through fleas. They also will shed eggs in the environment, but the most common way of people getting tapeworms is actually the swallowed flea, which happens much more commonly with children than with adults.
So they'll swallow a flea that was on their dog?
Right. Not something that usually people have to worry about, but especially when, let's say, someone adopts a dog into their house or takes in a stray, doesn't realize that they're covered in fleas, and now we have a flea problem, especially with small kids that are apt to put toys and all kinds of things in their mouth, that can be an issue.
Okay. In terms of what happens when we humans may possibly get these things, that's not something that you want to comment on? Is it generally very serious? Do you know offhand?
It depends on each case. Again, roundworms are very dangerous because they really do get lost inside the body. They really don't know where to go. And they can start going into the eyes, the liver, the brain. I mean, and cause very serious issues.
Okay.
Things like tapeworms, actually at turn of the century, they were actually sold through the mail as a form of weight loss.
Oh, that's rich.
there's a ghost town that I grew up nearby, and inside the window of one of the display cases, they actually saw the advertisement to buy tapeworm eggs. In general, where dogs and cats won't show any clinical signs, I do think that that's probably one of the most misleading things that I hear. I hear every day with clients, oh, I don't need to test my dog, I don't need to worry about it because I see his stool every day and it looks normal. Well, if you go hiking, you see coyote and other wild animal species, they look very normal as well. They're not having diarrhea. These animals look very healthy and robust, yet they're filled with parasites. So in dogs and cats, it's a misnomer that your pet is going to look or act sick with having these parasites. Whereas with people, because we have for generations done everything that we can not to have these intestinal parasites, when we get them, typically our clinical signs will be much more severe. It's not really as common to have for people to have roundworms and tapeworms without having some intestinal upset.
Okay, that's good to know. And again, for those people that are interested in new dieting techniques, let's stay away from tapeworms.
Yes, shortly after the turn of the century, they stopped.
Okay, thank goodness. Okay, and now, I know there's also another couple that are less common but can be very serious, stuff like rabies. Can we talk about rabies a little bit? We hear about that a lot, how certain pets may have rabies or may contract rabies, and rabies is something that can also be passed to humans.
Right. Rabies is very dangerous, and the problem with rabies and why it's such a concern is once an animal or human starts to show clinical signs of rabies, there's really nothing that can be done. It is virtually always fatal. So that is the big concern. When people have a dog bite, the reason that there's a quarantine is that if the dog starts to show or the cat starts to show signs of rabies, that animal can be tested. And if that's the case, then special treatment can be done for the person to try to prevent and stop that virus in its tracks and not allow it to go to the clinical signs. If someone has a bite and we don't know and they start to then show signs, it will be fatal for the human. With dogs and cats, with the vaccines and the way that public awareness is, it's not something that we see very commonly with dogs and cats. The reason it's so important to get them vaccinated is it is something that we do see out with the wildlife. And so when you have suburban areas that have been surrounded by areas with wild animals, there is a constant access to rabies. And when we see these episodes, and every once in a while we will pick up animals in the wild that have plague, that have rabies, that have these diseases, we know that if we stopped the vaccine, it absolutely, we would start to see it inside of our city.
Okay, so basically some of the wildlife can carry rabies, and then if they bite our dogs or our cats, then the rabies can be transmitted, and then if by some accident they bite or scratch us, actually, is rabies only transmitted through saliva?
Through saliva, except in the bats.
Okay.
And bats are probably the number one, couple thing on the species of who carries it. In my opinion, one of the most dangerous sources of rabies is bats. And the reason is they do shed it in their urine. In fact, most people that do spelunking, the hobby of cave diving,
yeah.
They will end up getting rabies vaccinations because it's very much prominent inside the bat urine and can be transmitted. Other than that, it's virtually always through saliva and through a bite wound. One of the groups of animals that a lot of times people we always do worry about rabies is with rodents, and experimentally, rabbits, rats, mice, they can be infected with the rabies virus. However, it has never been seen outside the laboratory. And the reason that we think this is that in order to get rabies, you have to survive an attack by a rabid animal. And just with the way that rodents and what bunnies are is they don't ever seem to realistically survive the attack of a rabid animal, and so are not really considered a high level of risk.
Okay, and just so people know, if their pets are protected against rabies via a vaccine, is that 100% protection? Is that good protection?
It is excellent protection. With vaccines, I think we've talked about vaccines in the past.
Yeah.
Vaccines of viruses versus protozoa versus toxins versus viruses, there's a very difference in the level of protection. When it comes to viruses and when it comes to this virus in particular, it works very well.
Okay. So, you know, another reason to obviously have your pets vaccinated and, to protect against, even though it's a rare disease, we hear about it a lot. We're afraid of the results. So if our pets are vaccinated, we can feel, quite safe, I would imagine.
Correct.
Okay. Did we talk about, I think we just mentioned quickly giardia. I know giardia also in certain geographical areas, it's more of an issue than others. Can we talk about giardia really quickly?
Giardia is a protozoa. Protozoas are bacteria-like organisms. They're in a different kingdom of life. They're a little bit more advanced than bacteria. The giardia is typically found and contracted in stagnant water. It's a very common hiking disease. We see it over where I'm at in Arizona all the time. It's my number one positive on a fecal test. With giardia, it is something that is zoonotic, but not highly zoonotic. We don't totally understand the giardia, but there seems to be what are kind of considered strains, but the specialists will call them molecular assemblages. But for all intents and purposes, the strains of the giardia that affect people seem to be a bit different than the ones that affect dogs and cats. But there have been cases of getting giardia from your dog. What will happen is usually people and dogs get them from drinking water that's out in the environment, so swimming in lakes, water out of creeks, things like that. And then that will lead to anywhere from mild diarrhea to very bloody diarrhea from giardia. Luckily, this disease is very easily treatable in most cases. The medication is safe, works well, inexpensive. There's also a vaccine that's out for giardia. Because it is a protozoa, this vaccine does not work nearly as well, and it's in a bit of controversy.
But you see it very often, but other vets that you speak to that are not, you know, in areas where there's tons and tons of still water, they're not likely to see it very often, are they?
True. It really depends on where the region.
Okay. So obviously just talk to your own local veterinarian to find out, you know, if it's something you should be concerned about.
With regional diseases, with things like giardia, there's also something called leptospirosis, which is a type of bacteria spirochete. This is also present in just the water. It is a little bit more dangerous and deadly than the giardia in both people and dogs. It can cause kidney shutdown. The leptospirosis is a tropic and subtropic.
Let's talk really quickly about a couple of them that are more specific to cats. So I know there's a couple of them. Would you like to introduce them, Dr. Lee?
Sounds great. Ringworm. This is something that we hear and see all the time. When you talked about diseases that often people can give their pets, ringworm would be one of the high ones on the list, but it's very common for dogs and cats to give it to people. Where cats become something that we think more about with ringworm is that there are some cats that are what are called asymptomatic carriers, meaning that they have no clinical signs, they look totally normal, they just carry this on their fur. The ringworm, the name kind of sounds again like it would be a worm, but it's actually not. It's a fungus. The reason it's called ringworm is that on the skin, it will leave usually a characteristic raised ring, which almost looks like a small worm that would be under the skin, but again, it's fungal. In dogs, their clinical signs look very much like people, but cats will often show no signs whatsoever. So it's a very common way to get this skin disease, which is very irritating and, you know, cosmetic type problem.
So if we see ringworm on, like if we see it after we notice, say, and we just rub our cats and dogs, how are we going to get it?
It's a topical transmission. So when you touch it, it's the fungus ends up sitting on your skin and then starts to invade.
Okay.
Typically with people, especially if, well, I will see a lot is clients will have one of their children or members of the family diagnosed with ringworm and then will come in for treatment of their pets.
Okay. But unlike some of the others where it's oral fecal, this one is skin to skin.
Skin to skin, correct.
Okay. And how about the infamous cat scratch fever?
Cat scratch fever is from a type of bacteria called Bartonella, and this can be transmitted by either scratches his nail, the bacteria lives on the nail, or can be in the mouth.
Is this also, just for those people, is it also called cat scratch disease?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, it is.
Okay.
The problem with this bacteria is it can cause a wide variety of signs and can invade and attack people. With the cats, it's something that can be often normally under the nails, more commonly with younger cats. When the person gets scratched, if that bacteria happens to be there, there can be a whole host of clinical signs, swollen lymph nodes, not feeling well, and will cause overall or systemic signs rather than just an infection right at the skin. It can be quite a very serious disease and have quite a lot of complications.
Is it more serious in like younger people or immunocompromised people, or can just your average healthy adult get some bad, get some bad consequences from getting this?
Yeah, your average person can get some very serious consequences from cat scratch fever. Obviously, that makes people that are on the older, younger, or immunocompromised scale even more so. But it can be a very serious problem. In fact, with cat scratches and cat bites, often they can be much more dangerous than dog bites.
Okay, very good to know. Very good to know. How often do you hear about it? Just you in your own practice, let's say?
Well, it's certainly something that we get worried about. I've known a couple of people that, quite a number of people that have gotten it. Very uncomfortable. They usually have a long story of what they've gone through. It's certainly not a fun problem. I think the keynote is that if you do get bit by a dog or a cat, and especially if the skin is broken, it is important to go to your doctor right away, because they're usually going to be putting you on some antibiotics to prevent these types of problems.
Obviously, you know, very logical, sound, prudent advice, but people need to follow it. Their bodies aren't always going to fight these things so easily, depending on what caused it. So, I mean, it just makes perfect sense. You know, if you're bitten or scratched by a cat or a dog, especially a cat or a dog that you don't know, but even a cat or dog that may have been playing outside or something like that, and they're breaking the skin and transmitting stuff into your own body, go see a doctor. It only makes sense. And there's one that we hear a lot too, especially with cats, especially with pregnant women and cats and changing the cat litter, toxoplasmosis. Can you talk about that for a little bit, Dr. Lee?
Toxoplasmosis is a disease that some cats have. The problem is that it's hard to tell which cats do and which cats don't. It's shed in the feces and is very, very contagious and can affect people. The big concern is that people that are pregnant, it has been associated with abortion. So this is the reason why anyone that is pregnant, thinking of becoming pregnant, should not be changing out their litter. This becomes a great option for the guy to take another step to kind of help out.
Exactly. So men step up to the plate. You know, just to ask, let's say you have, you know, a single mom that's pregnant and there's no man in the house and she has to do this herself. How is it usually transmitted? Is it skin to skin? How does it work?
The nice thing about this is that after the cat passes the stool, it does not become infectious for 24 to 48 hours. So there are people that are in this situation that will actually, if you change the litter every single day, then there he goes, you would not be able to be infected because it had not become activated yet.
Okay, that's very good to know.
But with that said, guys.
Guys, yeah. There's
litter box.
Yeah, exactly. Again, just in case they are alone and they need to do this, is wearing gloves going to help? Is wearing a little mask going to help? Just to be on the super safe side, even though a woman that's changing it by herself, that's listening to this, that's going to wait not 24 hours, so she'll be, you know, she'll be under the active time where the bacteria might be present. Gloves and mask, is that going to help?
I like those ideas.
Okay.
Gloves and masks sound like a great idea.
Okay. So, you know, as a last result, you know, change the litter, you know, every day, wear gloves and masks. But if you can, you know, find someone to help you out during your pregnant time, I guess, is obviously going to be safer. So thanks for helping us out with those zoonotic diseases, Dr. Lee. And I know there are a couple of diseases that people think are zoonotic, but they actually aren't. I was wondering if maybe you can give us a little bit of an explanation on what those might be.
Pinworms are certainly the number one thing that dogs and cats get blamed for, that they have no responsibility in. Pinworms are something that's commonly seen with children. It's a little bit gross, but it is also a fecal-oral type disease of transmission. But dogs and cats don't get them. So it's purely a child-to-child disease.
So a child may get this disease from another child, and yet the dog is blamed?
Right. It's a fecal-oral contamination.
Okay, so from maybe one sibling to another.
Right, or one playmate to another.
Okay, so it's probably popular in daycares and stuff like that.
Right.
So if you hear about it, don't blame the pets, because they have nothing to do with pets.
Exactly.
So thanks very much for telling us all about that, Dr. Lee. You know, a lot of people are so concerned about it, so now maybe they can be concerned in the right ways. You know, if things are endemic or problematic in their particular area, or just general vaccinations, you know, against the main ones that we talked about at the beginning, you know, especially the hookworms and roundworms for their dogs and cats, then that will totally, you know, diminish the likelihood that they're going to get it. So, you know, thanks so much for doing this, Dr. Lee. And, you know, we'll be speaking with you in the very near future.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks as always, Dr. Lee.
Thank you.
Bye for now. So that was our interview with Dr. Lee about zoonosis. Thanks very much, Dr. Lee. We so appreciate your insight. And Dr. Lee was also gracious enough to give us a great link. And the link is for the Center for Disease Control, the CDC. And the address is cdc.gov/healthypets. The link to go in the show notes. And through that link, you can browse by animal, you can browse by disease, and get even more information, way more information than what we talked about today. So thanks very much, Dr. Lee, for that great link. Of course, if you're looking for a vet, we do recommend Dr. Lee. He's amazing, and he practices in both Mesa and Phoenix, Arizona. So if you need a primary vet, or you need a second opinion, or you're just not happy with your vet, we can definitely recommend Dr. Lee. And Dr. Lee's website is aachospitals.com. Link again to go in the show notes. So thanks very much for listening, everyone. We wish you a great day, a great week. Happy New Year again. And as always, please give your pets a deliciously sweet hug and a little scratchy under the chin from Marco. Bye for now.